But by way of review, last time we looked at more of the gory details of the brothers. You know the expression, skeleton in a closet? Well, for them, it was like multiple skeletons. Open the door, flood of skeletons getting out of the closet because it's just bad. We look at them and we're like, wow, they're disqualified. How could God ever use them? But we look at ourselves, and while we may not have sinned in the exact same ways in doing their actions, the root sins that they dealt with, we deal with. Remember what Christ said from Matthew 5? Even our thoughts condemn us so often. Whether it's lust, whether it's hatred. Remember Matthew 5, it says, if you simply hate your sibling without a cause, you're in danger of judgment. And we can go further and further. We could say, fantasizing about stealing. Well, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to plan it out in my head. I'm not going to do anything. Still wrong. I really implore you guys that we're not to detach yourself from this story. Remember, this is relevant to us. What Paul says in Romans 15:4 is just particularly insightful. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, and that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. So last time, we saw where Reuben failed, who succeeded in terms of vowing to take Benjamin. Reuben says, I'll do it. Dad's like, no. So who?
Judah.
Yeah, Judah. Judah succeeds. He steps up. Is he the likely choice of a leader? No. No one would have thought. From what we've seen from his suggestion to sell Joseph in 37 and all of his sin listed in a whole chapter of Scripture, he just does not come as the likely hero, but he steps up as leader of the family. So he vows on his own life, and there's a difference between him and Reuben. Reuben valued on his sons' lives. He says, I will do it. It'll be on my own life and my own family if I can't bring Benjamin back to you, speaking to his father. And he doesn't know it yet, but he's really going to have to put his money where his mouth is when it comes to making that vow. So last lesson, we finished with the party. Turn to Genesis 43. Genesis 43. Can I volunteer to read? Jog your memories. Thank you, Christina. Voluntold. All right. Can you read the last two verses of chapter 43? Thank you.
And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men marveled one at another. And he took and sent messes unto them from before him. But Benjamin's mess was five times so much as any of theirs. And they drank and were merry with him.
Okay, so what did I say last time was a mess? What was that another word for that? Just a more current. Yeah, it's his portion of food, all right? It's your serving, all right? So he gets five times the amount of his brothers. And what in the text shows just how envious and bitter they are of Benjamin? Nothing, which is great. We don't see them at all mentioned in the text where they're just bitter against him because he seems to have been favored from this second guy in command of all Egypt. So it's great. It's like maybe there is hope that they're now looking at Benjamin correctly. So they're having fun. It's a party. There is a reason for them to celebrate. There is a reason why they should be partying at this point. Everything is finally going well. For example, we talked about them coming back worried that they found the money that was in their bags and was in every single one of their bags. They come back to the steward. They immediately go up to him to try to figure this out. We have no idea how this got in our bags. Can you help us out? And he's like, no, you paid me the money. Your God has given you this. Like, all the worry that they had is gone. That's a cause for celebration. Number two, they rescued Simeon. Remember, he was stuck there behind for weeks and weeks and weeks. And now he's out. And now they can fellowship with him. They can joke around that, hey, we would have left you in there. Because you smell so bad. And they're now with their brothers. Okay, so there's that. Benjamin's doing just fine. Remember, it's Judah's responsibility to make sure he's okay. But he's not just doing fine. He's doing great. He's getting all these extra portions of food. He's really digging in. Lastly, they can now trade because they have fulfilled their promise. They have brought back Benjamin. They can trade. They can get the food that they need to help their families and save them. And it's just fantastic. They can leave the next day with as much grain as they need. Remember, they have all their money. So they can reuse their old money to buy more grain and leave and go save their families and be the heroes. Maybe even Jacob would be impressed with everything they've done. So they party, and they really party. In fact, they party too much, because the word in Hebrew here for to make merry with only ever means to be drunk. Okay, so picture this scene. They're at this banquet room. The Egyptians are only walking in to give them more food and drink. Otherwise, the Egyptians are not eating with them, because they don't eat with Hebrews. It's like an abomination to them. So they're there by themselves. They get to be a little bit more relaxed. They've had too much to drink. How would you picture this scene? I want us to put ourselves maybe in the corner of this room, looking at them. Describe to me. Use your imagination. How would you picture this scene? Sarah. Sure, okay. Zebulun. What? Everyone's laughing. What else? They've had too many, but they're eating away.
Well, they're being treated like guests of the palace, so they're probably, to be honest, abusing their, what's it called when you call for room service? You know, getting a bunch of enjoying the good life.
Right, living it up. When was the last time they could eat like this? How many years of famine had it been to this point? Dose. So they get a chance to pig out and drink as much as they want. They are living it up. You can imagine they're laughing. You know, we got a couple of the guys singing off key. A food fight, maybe. This happy-go-lucky, chaotic scene is happening in this banquet hall. And in my sanctified imagination, I don't know if this ever happened, but how I picture the scene is Joseph's in a corner behind a curtain, just peering in. And he's looking at them, and he's serious. They're all making all this noise and partying, having fun, and throwing a chicken wing at the other brother, and all this stuff. And he's serious, because he's right about to give them the biggest test of them all. He doesn't know if they're going to pass. And he has his steward right there, and it's a somber moment there, picturing this scene. And the scene does shift from their party to now Joseph. So Joseph turns to his steward and he says something. What does he say? Now we're at the next chapter. Genesis 44, verse 1. And he commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put every man's money in his sack's mouth, and put my cup, the silver cup, in the sack's mouth of the youngest, and his corn money. And he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. So eventually, at this point in time, the brothers, they go to the place that they're going to sleep. They're probably bumping into walls. They've had too many. So they sleep the alcohol off. Verse 3. And as soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. Okay, so this is the hero's journey back home. Can you imagine how excited they are? Everything has gone well to this point. You know, Reuben's telling Gad to stop singing We Are the Champions for the fifth time, rolling their eyes. This is a great time for them. They've got Benjamin, they've got the food, they're coming back to save their families as heroes. Then what happens? This is the moment where, like, the movie directors, they roll the credits. Like, this is a great time to stop in the movie. They've saved their family. It's the end. But it's not the end yet. Now look. Now when they had gone out of the city, and not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, up, like, go, follow after the men. And when thou dost overtake them, say unto them, wherefore have ye rewarded evil for good? Is not this it in which my Lord drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth? Ye have done evil in so doing. And he overtook them, so he pulls them over, and he spake unto them these words. So he accuses them of theft, and it's like, you can imagine their mood immediately changing. It's been happy-go-lucky, it's great, they're heading home, things are going to be great, and now they're being accused of theft. All right? Look how they respond here in such confidence. And they said unto him, the steward, now it says they, so we have no idea who's speaking here. It could be that one is chiming in right at one after the other, or it could be that one guy is speaking for everyone and everyone else is just nodding their heads. It says they. And they said unto him, wherefore saith my Lord these words? God forbid that thy servant should do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we found in our sack's mouth, we brought it again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy Lord's house silver or gold? This makes no sense. When we had this mysterious money, we even keep it. We came and we made sure that it was all good with you guys. Why in the world would we now steal from you? We got our grain. The accusation makes no sense at all. Notice how strongly they think themselves so innocent. And the lengths they will go in their confidence to say if someone has sinned, what their punishment will be. 9. With whomsoever of thy servants it be found, both let him die. And we also will be my Lord's bondsmen. We'll be the servants. Wow, what a severe accusation for simply theft of a silver cup. What in the world would they imagine for selling a brother into slavery? Cough. 10. And he, this is the steward speaking, said, now also let it be according to your words. Okay, so they've set the standard. Death for whomever has the cup, and everyone else will be servants. He with whom it shall be found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. 11. Then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground and opened every man his sack. So it's like airport security. Let's just get this over with. Here's our stuff. Take a look. And he, the steward, searched and began at the eldest and left at the youngest. So they go in order, just like how they were seated. Remember, it was astronomically crazy for them to be seated in order, not knowing who was the oldest of the whole group. Here we're going eldest to youngest, just like that same situation. At this point, the steward probably gets out his knife. They're going to open the top of the bag, and he's going to stab the grain to see if there's any clash of metal. Now, before we kind of know what's going to happen in the story, if you know the story. Before he finds the cup in Benjamin's bag, what else is he going to find?
A sack of gold.
Yeah. He's going to find their money yet again in their bags. So that's the second time this mysterious money gets put back. Up till this point, like the first instance, you know, ever since they cleared it with the steward, it's been a blessing. It's a great thing. But now, it causes doubt. What if this money could reappear, and us have no idea how it happened, what if a cup is in one of the bags? And you can imagine just the tension getting worse and worse as they see every single person having their bag of money. And then eventually the steward opens Benjamin's sack, stabs his knife in, and tink, there's that metal on metal contact. Puts his hand in, and there is the silver cup. 13. The reaction. And they rent their clothes and laded every man his donkey and returned to the city. What do you think Benjamin's doing at this point? If he wasn't stone cold terrified. Let's say he was that, and then maybe he could talk after 10, 20 minutes. What do you think Benjamin is saying, if he can say anything at this point? Yeah.
In the book of Job, it talks about to remain silent is to admit guilt. Mm-hmm. And so he was probably all the way to Egypt professing his innocence, emphatically, making probably stronger oaths than the brothers of his innocence on the entire way there.
Yeah. He's probably saying, hey, we were all in the same room, sleeping on the floor or whatever. No one woke up to see me go steal something. I didn't even know if it was silver or gold. I never touched it. It wasn't me. I have no idea how this happened. You can just see him defending himself the whole way through. Now, from what Judah is going to say in this chapter, I believe firmly that Judah did not think that Benjamin took the cup. But what can you do at this point? They have the cup. Benjamin looks 100% guilty. What can they do? Moving on. And Judah and his brethren came to Joseph's house, and we're in verse 14, for he was yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. So this is fulfillment of the dream. This is absolute humility. They're all bowing down to the ground. And Joseph said to them, and you can imagine his tone, and how he's acting here, because he's playing the role of the second command of Egypt. What deed is this that ye have done? Wot ye not that such a man as I can certainly divine? Do I think he practices divination as the pagans do with cups? No. I think that's all part of the role of him pretending to be this pagan guy that he's not. Just like he has the role of the interpreter, that's not necessary. He's all playing a part. And he's convincing. Now notice how Judah speaks for the rest. Again, showing himself as the leader of the family. 16. And Judah said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? Okay, plural. God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants, plural. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we, plural, and he also with whom the cup is found. Why doesn't he not say, Benjamin's guilty? God has found out Benjamin's sin. Why is he using plural? Is he really talking about the cup situation? Or is this all a result of the past sin of them selling Joseph into slavery? That's what's on their mind. And they're looking at it like, well, God has orchestrated this for them to see their guilt. 17. And he, this is Joseph, said, God forbid that I should do so. But the man in whose hand the cup is found, he shall be my servant. And as for you, get you up in peace unto your father. So he like pretends to misunderstand what Judah just said, which again is convincing because interpretation issues of having an interpreter there. He's saying, hey, this is nothing to do with all of you. My only problem is this guy who has my cup. You all can leave. You have your grain. More power to you. I hope there's not traffic on the way home. It's fine. But is it fine? Now, for us, this is the final and greatest test. So they can have everything that they want except Benjamin. They were willing for, sure, Benjamin can have 5 extra portions of food. We can party it up at this banquet hall. We can all be happy together and be merry together. But now here's the option to walk away with their grain to help their families, their gold that they paid for is returned to them, mysteriously, and they can leave the favored sibling behind. And they've got Simeon, so trade in humans. But they can leave the favored sibling behind. The one for now 22 years, Jacob has switched. He's not favoritistic to Joseph because Joseph's gone, but now he has Benjamin. He's the one he's given attention to. He's the one that he cared about more than Simeon. Simeon can die and rot in Egypt. You're not taking Benjamin. Remember what he said earlier. This is their opportunity, almost the exact same type of opportunity as they had with Joseph. And that's why this is on purpose. This has been orchestrated to see whether they will leave Benjamin behind. It's interesting what he says. Let me see if I can find the verse. Get up, get you up in peace unto your father. You know, what would happen to Jacob if they weren't able to bring back Benjamin? What did Jacob say? He doesn't come back from the trip. It's going to kill him. It's going to bring his gray hairs unto the grave. So that's kind of ironic because that would kill him. All right. Notice the humility and meekness of Judah now. Judah's going to speak up for the final plea. Judah has been preeminent in these conversations, in this dialogue. So this is not the man that we've read about in 37 or 38. Look at what Judah says. 18. Then Judah came near unto him and said, O my Lord, Let thy servant, I pray thee, just speak a word in my Lord's ears. Let not thine anger burn against thy servant, for thou art even as Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? So he's starting from the history of how Joseph, we know it's Joseph, but how Joseph interrogated them about their father, about if they had another brother, to see how they would respond. He's going back here to make a point. Have you a father or a brother? And we said unto my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, a little one, and his brother is dead. And he alone is left of his mother, and his father loveth him. Ouch. There's the favoritism. It's like, dad loves him. 21. And thou sayest unto thy servants, bring him down unto me, that I may set mine eyes upon him. And we said unto my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would, what? Die. And thou saidest unto thy servants, except your youngest brother come down with you, ye shall see my face no more. Okay, we're not going to be able to trade without seeing Benjamin. That's what you told us. So we brought Benjamin to you so we could trade and survive. And it came to pass, when we came up unto thy servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord. And our father said, go again and buy us a little food. You know, remember his reaction? It's like knee-jerk, just go. No one's thinking about saving Simeon. It's not going to work. And we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother be with us, then we will go down. For we may not see this man's face, except our youngest brother be with us. And thy servant, my father, said unto us, ye know that my wife bare me two sons. Again, separation of groups. You have Rachel's kids and Leah's kids. So my wife bare me two sons, Rachel's kids. And the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn in pieces, and I saw him not since. And if you take this also from me, and mischief befall him, something evil happens, you shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I come to thy servant my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die, and thy servant shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant our father with sorrow to the grave. This will kill our father. Judah is saying this is not a trivial thing. You say go in peace, there will not be peace. It will kill him to see that we do not have Benjamin. For thy servant became surety. This is his oath, saying, his life for mine, I will make sure that Benjamin is returned to you. His collateral. And for thy servant, this is Judah speaking, became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me? Lest peradventure I shall see the evil that shall come on my father. So Judah pleads with Joseph, calmly, logically, saying, I am willing to sacrifice my home, my family, my blessing, and everything to trade. Who in this scenario has done the wrong? It looks like Benjamin. It says his cup. It was his sack the cup was found in. So Judah's willing to take the blame for something he did not do. And this is what impresses Joseph. So this is really him fulfilling his oath. The brothers here, they've come full circle. This is the same type of opportunity, yet they're passing the test this time. They originally didn't care what their father thought. Okay, we're going to create this whole scenario. We're going to make it look like Joseph was killed by some wild animal. Who cares? It was kind of a stab to the father because of his favoritism to Joseph in the first place. And now we see this emphasis that we care about our patriarchal father, Jacob. Then you come to one of the most emotional scenes in the whole Old Testament. This is the type of drama that you just can't make up. This is the type of stuff that movies wish they had in terms of quality dialogue. All right, 45. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him. And he cried, and he shouted, "Cause every man to go out from me. Leave us," essentially. And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. So he says, to all his Egyptians, get out. And he wept aloud. And the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. That's how loud he was crying. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. First question, doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. They don't understand. They don't get it. How can this be Joseph? Doesn't look like Joseph. Now he's finally talking Hebrew. It's just confusion. And he said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. Here we're getting to the whole purpose of why Joseph is alive. The whole sovereign working. What is the end result? That what should happen?
Isn't it really interesting? Joseph's entire reason of living, if you look at his entire lifespan, it's to take care of the people that betrayed him. Mm-hmm. God had him go through all of this trouble from people so that for the purpose of him saving those people. That's very mirroring of Jesus, mm-hmm. where Jesus lived his entire life enduring problems from people to save people.
Yep. Yeah, the parallel is super strong between Joseph and Judah, because Judah is willing to sacrifice himself, even though it's something that he did not do. Yep. Good point. And it's like there's all these ultimate purposes of this story. They're finally, we're getting there, because we're now towards the climax emotionally in this story. But still, for those of us that remember Hebrews 11, this is not the ultimate factor that God says, this is what I want Joseph to be known for. We don't see Joseph mentioned about his prison life. We don't see about the pit. We don't see his faithfulness running away from Potiphar's wife. We don't see his willingness not to kill his brothers in the first chance he gets with all this power second in command. None of that is mentioned in Hebrews 11. But we're finally getting to the point where we can see, okay, this is clearly what the purpose of this man's life is. We're getting to the end where we can finally make some concrete black and white. This is why God has done everything else before. For starters, it's to save the line, so Judah can live, so then Judah can have kids, and 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 eventually have Christ. The line would not come through Benjamin, which I'm pretty sure Jacob was convinced it would be Benjamin, because it's not Joseph, it's got to be the one that I love the most from Rachel. No, it would be from Judah. This man who stands up despite his flaws and huge personal mistakes, God says, no, I'll have Christ come through his line. It's incredible. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years have famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall be neither earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not that you that sent me hither. Could they be blamed? Yes. But at the same point, God had orchestrated these events to take place. That he's saying, well, ultimately, Yes, you were used and in your sinfulness, but even God used that. Then the grand scheme of things, God made certain things happen where you made sinful choices because of your lusts to remove the annoying siblings. You never had to deal with that. It was about them. Yet, at the same time, God uses messed up events to accomplish his will. God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a Pharaoh, a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. We're not even at the point where it's like the most famous phrase in the whole story of Joseph. That comes later. There's still some important things to happen, but that is pretty much the end of part one. And I want to go through the rest next time. Thank you for listening.